Well, I count it a real privilege to be able to kick off this session on the 2-7 series, rooted and built up in Him, established in the faith as you have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. And that's the point of the whole thing. For years, the navigators have been asked the question from time to time, or navigators have been asked the question from time to time, what are you doing in the local church? And I don't know how you have responded to that, you know, in the last 15 years or so. But I have usually found myself stammering and stuttering and trying to come up with an answer that really sounded good. And you know, you could come up with something that sounded good. But down in your heart, most of the time, you were just a little embarrassed. Because I think most of us felt that we had something that could contribute to the local church, that God had led us in a way in our ministry and through the scriptures and had given us concepts and ideas and materials and other things that could in some way make a significant contribution to a local church, but we could never quite put it together in a way that made it work. Short of a navigator staff man going into a local church situation and virtually becoming a part of the church staff. Now, we have seen that work. Our problem there, of course, is limited resources with unlimited opportunities. Until now. And I think, thinking back over history, and I've been with the Navs over 20 years, is why I get excited about the 2-7. It's very obvious to me that the Lord has had His hand on Ron Ortley and the guys up in Denver over the last several years in coming to grips with this issue of how can we have a ministry in a local church short of a staff man actually going on the staff or being, you know, pretty close to becoming that. And getting that involved in a single church. And I know those guys have been through many heart struggles. I know they have, by their own admission, made many mistakes. In fact, I think after listening to 7 or 8 of those guys who were deeply involved in the 2-7 ministry last February, we spent a couple of days with them here at the Glen, talk about some of the experiences they've had. They probably feel they've made just about every mistake in the book. And they've learned from it. During that session, I had come to it prepared with some pretty hard questions for them, and I think I had my questions totally answered and satisfied. But I feel that the Lord has led these men in putting together what the church is looking for. Now, I have been a pastor and an assistant pastor, and I don't think things have changed all that much in most local churches in the 20 years that I have been out of that, in that most churches are looking for a package, a program. They do think in terms of leadership on occasion, and so they put together a little seminar on how to become a Sunday school teacher or something like that. And I'm not being facetious here, but this is the way the mentality works. Well, the 2-7 is a package. It's a program. Now, true, it needs good leadership, but it's adaptable to a church situation. And I find myself with gusto sitting down with a pastor now and explaining it to him, and we've got something to offer him without any apology and without walking away with guilt feelings. And I find that exciting. I've had that happen to me at least a half a dozen times just in the last 6 months. Where I'll find myself over lunch or breakfast or something with a pastor, and we'll begin to talk about his ministry. And I'll ask him, well, have you, and he'll say, do the navigators have anything? Well, have you heard about the 2-7 series that some of our men have put together? Well, no, tell me about it. So I begin to explain a little bit about it that I know, and I see his interest begin to rise. And then I can put him in touch with a staff man close to him. And that to me is exciting. But I think the most exciting thing to me about this, and I don't want to try and oversell here, and I'm not trying to sell, I'm just merely giving my feelings on it. But I think the most exciting thing to me is the potential for making a real impact on a broad scale in local evangelical churches through the way God could use the 2-7 in an extensive way. Because the beautiful thing about it is it doesn't take a Navigator staff man to use it. Once a committed layman gets a hold of it and has been through it or has been through part of it or attended the seminar and gotten involved, he can begin to take that and implement it in his local church. It doesn't even take a pastor to do it. Now, we would be excited with as many pastors who would get a hold of it and begin to use it. And I think that is beginning to happen. And to me, this has the potential of really making an impact with a disciple-making ministry throughout evangelical Christendom, not only here in the United States, but overseas. And already there is beginning to develop a growing interest in certain countries overseas in this. And guys are beginning to ask questions and wanting to find out more about it. So I really believe that the Lord has brought together a tool that, used properly in the right situations, and the men have come to grips with those issues. What is the right kind of situation that makes it conducive to success? They've got answers to that. What is the right kind of person to handle it? What does he need to have within himself? And what kind of gifts and abilities does he need to have? So they've come to grips with those issues. And I think that God has given us a tool that has the potential of really, truly impacting evangelical Christianity toward a disciple-making type of ministry. I am excited about it. I feel that the Lord has led these men. He has given us a tool that has the potential of really extremely great growth, and that it does not have to be limited. I think this, and I reemphasize this, that it does not have to be limited to just a NAV staff person. The alumni. I don't know that we've seen this happen a great deal yet, but we've got a bunch of people coming out of our collegiate ministry, who already are out of our collegiate ministry, and those who will in the future, and our military ministry, who are familiar with scripture memory, with Bible study, with the concepts of having a quiet time and developing a devotional life with the Lord, who know a little bit about evangelism, and the basics that we refer to so frequently in the NAV ministry. But most of those people could never go into a church situation where they will eventually end up as a young married couple and beginning to have kids and so forth, and take all that they have become familiar with and had pumped into them in a Navigator ministry. They would not have the ability to take that, put it together, and make it work in their church. Most of them wouldn't have the organizational ability. They couldn't see the whole picture and take all those different parts and pieces of a puzzle and put it together. Well, the 2-7 has done that. Most of those type of people that I'm talking about are familiar with all of the content that is in the 2-7, but the 2-7 has taken and put it together in a package, in an organized way, that they could take and begin to implement in a small way and then maybe in a growing way in their local church. And that, to me, has tremendous possibilities. So there's all kinds of ramifications of it that I feel God is really in, and he has at last given us a tool. And also, the climate in the United States particularly right now could not be more conducive to this type of an approach. The word disciple is very well accepted. It's the in thing to have some kind of a discipling thing going in your church or in your Christian ed program. Now, they may not mean the same thing by it that we do, but nevertheless, it has created an atmosphere at this particular point in time when I think we can have a tremendous impact with this thing. So those are a few thoughts, and I'll turn it over to Bob Stevens now.
Thanks, Jack. A little over a year ago, I didn't know a thing about the 2-7 course, and now I are one. So when Jack assigned me the project of evaluating how things were going in the 2-7 around the world, or around the U.S., one of the things I started was a 2-7 group of my own in my own church. We're now in course 3, which is just a little under halfway through, so I'm really a novice in the 2-7. But Doris and I feel that the couples we have in our 2-7 group are growing more than any couples that we've had in any Bible study group or other type of growth group that we've had over our 20 years of Navigator ministry. So we're personally excited about what we're seeing God do through the course in our own lives and ministry. And then as I went around the country visiting areas that were using the 2-7 course, I ran into Nav graduates. I ran into a Navy chief out in Los Angeles, retired Navy chief, who had been trying to apply the things that he had learned in his Navigator days to his local church situation, and he had never succeeded. He either went too fast or too slow or turned people off or rammed it down their throat too hard, or somehow it wasn't working. But with the 2-7 course for the last couple of years, he has been making disciples. There are staff who are using the course who say, I'm doing a better job of making disciples using the 2-7 course than I did before, because it takes, I take a young Christian systematically through all the NAV basics using the course, whereas before it depended on my planning a course for each individual person. Sometimes I would overemphasize this and leave this out altogether and everything, but here I'm taking them through now a thorough course in the NAV basics. I ran across pastors who were so excited, one pastor in Oregon, so excited that he wants to leave the pastorate and become a 2-7 representative to his denomination, just to spread it throughout the denomination. And he has several hundred in the 2-7 course in his church. My wife says that she has become consistent in her quiet time for the first time in her life, after 20 years with the Navigators, as a result of the 2-7 course. So we're personally excited to be involved, and I know that this is a great day for Ron, because he has invested 10 years of his life in developing this course, and as most of you know, they have not been always easy years. What he's doing hasn't always been accepted or approved of, even by his supervisor. He's endured persecution for Jesus' sake. And now to be able to see God using it all over the world, actually, I trust will be a great fulfilling thing to Ron. And at different stages in the development, God brought different people along to help Ron. Bob Wilbraham and Bob Lovelace were assigned to Denver to help Ron in the development of the 2-7 ministry. Bob, as you know, was editor of the Navlog for many years, so his writing skills were helpful, and that's Bob Lovelace and Bob Wilbraham's experience in the ministry as they field tested and hammered this thing out through experience. And now I feel that God has assigned me to run with Ron now, because I'm supposed to be an organizer and an administrator to help kind of get the thing spread a little bit. And I feel very much like a person who's been given a McDonald's franchise for the local high school. You know, there's not much, you know, to develop a plan for the growth of the 2-7 course, there's not much you would need to do to promote sales of the McDonald's products in the high school. About the only thing that needs attention is quality control and keeping the things coming up fast enough. And so that's, I think, where the effort needs to be placed. I learned that the course is a basic syllabus using the NAV tools that we have developed over 40 years out in our area ministries, puts them together in an orderly fashion, and through trial and error, the speed with which the course goes and the order in which it's put together has been hammered out. The objective is the profile of a navigator disciple. And we feel that a good percentage of the people that complete the course would meet the profile of a NAV disciple. It's only a tool. It needs a leader. And it needs a open-hearted, eager, young Christian who wants to grow to make it succeed. And the graduate situation that Jack talked about has been one of the greatest burdens on my heart for probably the past 10 or 15 years. And I feel that this course has the potential of being a major help in transitioning graduates into an effective disciple-making ministry in their local churches. So I think we'd like to hear Ron explain what the course is, how it came about, and then I'd like to wind up with just a little bit of the plans for the future when Ron's finished. Ron?
I'm supposed to tell you about the hamburgers and the French fries. That's my part of the program here. So that's what we'll do. This is the direction we're going. I'd like to say a few words before I speak, and then I'll get into the contents and a little bit of the history and some of the philosophy and use of the materials. First of all, I would say that, if I can find that part of my notes here, I would say that my goal here this morning is to inform you. I don't hear of any trend in the NAV leadership to impose this upon you as the only thing you do in your ministry. And I don't feel any land swell that this is going to be all that the community ministry is going to do or anything. But I'm here to explain to you the contents and its use so that whatever percentage you feel led to use it, you can use it and know where to fit that in. But as I talk to guys around here and this week, a guy will say, well, I'm about 50% traditional, 50% 2-7. Another one will say, I'm 80% 2-7 and 20% traditional. And I think if I weren't going to roar around the countryside here, doing a little promotion the next year, or whatever Stevens gets me doing, I probably would shift gears this year, next year, and just hit pagans. Just forget the church. I got it going in those churches, and just hit pagans for a couple of years. 90% pagans, 10% church. I don't see us getting boxed in. But whatever percentage use you'd like to use. I don't feel it's a panacea. I do feel that there's been a lot of prayer and thought go into it, and there are places to use it. I would say this, that the students wrote a lot of the material. They wrote more of the material than Lovelace and Wilbraham and I did. Because we just went in the field and tried something on them and said, well, what don't you understand? And they told us, and, then we'd write something, and then the next bunch through, we'd try that out on them, and they'd say, oh, yeah, we get it. And so the students wrote a lot of the material. Just a couple of thoughts on, before nitty-gritty here, but I really feel that anything will succeed where there was given adequate prayer and thought and effort. I see that biblically, and just, get a chance to preach at you just a little bit here without just getting into 2-7. But I've really reflected a lot on that about the last 3 years. That to which I give prayer and thought and effort succeeds. I've been impressed with 2 Chronicles 1:7, and that night did God appear unto Solomon and said unto him, ask what I shall give thee. And there have been 2 or 3 times along the way where I got alone with God and just thought, now what's the greatest thing I could pray, or what would I like to pray really big or something? Or where do I really need the wisdom of God? and just pour out to my heart to God on that. And say, God, here's what I'm concerned about. I see it in the life of Ezra. I see it in the life of Nehemiah. And I see right in that context, like the whole book of Ezra, that several times through the passage, it says, and the hand of God was on him. That's a reoccurring phrase over and over. And the hand of God was on him. And I see both of those men taking time to reflect and think and figure out and use the brains God had given them and the experience, but also in prayer. And in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 18, is just representative of a number of passages in those two books and other places. But it says, they strengthened their hands for this good work. And so a combination of those three things. And some days when Wilbraham and Lovelace and I are working on a revision, you know, all day, 8:30 to 4 o'clock, and just cranking it out and still trying to keep our ministries going, and for a while, 2 days a week doing that, trying to finalize this stuff, you know, you get to wonder, you know, man, you know, what have we gotten into here? And so I think it's been a combination of those things. And as I get into philosophy, many of the things that are working were answers to prayer. We didn't know how to do something. And so we prayed about it and God gave an answer on how to do it. Okay, now let's get into the hamburgers and french fries vigorously here. I'll start as though you don't know anything about it, okay? It is 6 courses. They're 12 weeks in length. We normally will start the 1st of September and go through to the middle of June of that year and cover 3 courses. Then we will give them the summer off. They will take a break. They will take their vacations. They'll play with the kids, do their yard work, do a little painting and all the Mickey Mouse that it takes to live in the community. And then we'll crank it up again the 1st of September and go another 3 courses. We can crank it up in January and get a couple courses out of the way and take a break in the summer. The only reason there are 6 courses is we took the profile of a navigator disciple and said, how could we give them 2 or 3 or 4 inputs on each of these things and reinforce that thing, give them assignments, check up on them, come back and hit it again, and see these things happen in their lives. And then the third thing is that it was designed for church use. That's the whole thought behind it. If we want to use it, that's fine. But the thinking was to make it available for churches and their people. There's some standard inputs that you and I are all familiar with. The Beginning with Christ packet's in there. The TMS is in there. The bridge is in there. The DFDs are in there. The testimony is in there. The wheel is in there. The hand. Quiet time, a half day in prayer, some inputs on being teachable, meditation on verses, prayer list, how to do those, 5-point applications, verse analysis, evangelistic Bible study, priorities, use of time. Brand new stuff, huh? There are a few brand new things. For example, how to prepare understanding questions. When we wrote that section, bought every book in the bookstore, Christian bookstore, that had to do with small group dynamics and went through all that. There was nothing that really covered how to ask inductive questions. And there are 3 or 4 pages in Course 5 that are worth their weight in gold to you. There's been an awful lot of prayer and thought and effort gone into those pages, and it's a gold mine for you. Evangelism prospect list in Course 4, there's a little blurb in there. We call a thing we call the PACE concepts, P-A-C-E, and we cover P is personal journal, and we give that is a thing. The A is answers to prayer, writing down requests and answers. The C is daily checkup, and we've got that thing put together and how to do daily checkup. And the E is evangelism prospect list. And, you know, how do you write down a list of people to pray for in evangelism and go after? And who is priority? There's a good little thing in there. So there are a few little new things in there that I think you could use in any ministry, and it'd be of value to you just to get exposed to those if you haven't been. And trying to write something that church people can use, there are 2 problems that we keep running into, and we have to steer around. One is, how do you communicate this information and these concepts and motivate them in this? And so we'd try the wheel out on them and say, well, where are the blind spots on the wheel? What don't they understand about the wheel? What about the testimony? Do you know there was nothing in print hardly on the testimony? Look, on all this, we looked through all the NAV stuff. But how do you write a testimony? Man, you know, book two, SCL. Come next week with your testimony prepared. And so that's been all worked out. A, B, C, subpoint one, subpoint two little A's. I mean, it is worked out by the numbers in the testimony. And people are able to really prepare their testimonies and they're sharing them. Then at what rate of input can these people tolerate? What in the world can an average Bible-believing, evangelical, pew-sitting, church Christian tolerate? And the only way to figure that out is to go in the field and try it out on the average evangelical, Bible-believing, pew-sitting, church Christian and see if it worked. And we did. And there's a fellow working on his PhD in curriculum that went through, was using the 2-7 series and in it. And after he'd been into it, he said, do you realize that you are using the most current curriculum techniques that are known in the universities across this country today? No, we just prayed, asked God what to do. But figuring out the rate that they can tolerate. And so the field testing is very key. The curriculum people call it validation. That's what it is. Field testing. You blast out there and you validate it and figure out what they can handle and that sort of thing. You have several pages of handout material in your notebook. One is just a quick rundown on what the 2-7 trains people in. And I won't even go over that. It's very self-evident. Then you also have an overview of all six courses and what's involved there. I won't belabor this, but you have there a picture of what's involved in all each of the six courses and what is accomplished. Now, there are all kinds of little subtleties in the system. We haven't found it too effective to just hand this to a pastor and say, look at this. You know, he said, yeah, look at that. But you start pointing out some of the little subtleties, like you introduce scripture memory, and then you check up on the first verse, and then you teach them how to review verses together. You know, where in the NAV materials, you know, do you have a 5-point outline on how you quote verses together? We had to come up with it. You say, now when you quote your verses to this other person, here's what you do. So there are little subtleties in the system. But in course one, they do the beginning with Christ packet, then 12 verses each of the next courses. That gives them the TMS. Bible study, they do the DFD book. Whatever the course number is, they do that DFD book. We've had to change just a few questions to relate to the community, just here and there. For example, is there any hidden sin you have never revealed to anyone? Then the next question, what is it? And so we made a few little adjustments here and there. Not much. And they become a highly skilled small group leader by the end of course six. I mean a highly skilled small group leader. In course one, they just participate with a model leader. In course two, again, they just participate and the model leader leads. And I would say this on a model leader, I'll take anybody out of any one of my course fives or sixes and put them in there as a model of how to lead. Then in course three, they start leading, but we give them lead questions. In courses three and four, they lead, but we critique that thing. We sit in there and we split the men and the women. We want high caliber women leaders. We live in a culture where those women need to really get their mind together and sharp and crisp, and some of these housewives are vegetating, and get them out there leading that study and exercising their brain and praying and trusting God to do the right thing, and they're becoming capable. So in 3 and 4, we critique them to death, and they learn a bushel, as well as just the Bible study content. In course 5, we teach them how to write the questions to ask in the group. And then in course 6, they're on their own. We say, you lead this week, you lead the next week, you lead the next week. They prepare all their questions, come, lead, do the whole shot, and they do it well. On quiet time, I'll just go over that in just a minute, just a little insight into putting a handle on that. Testimony, they prepare that, and then miscellaneous projects down the right side. But there is not one thing they are assigned which is not checked up on. There is nothing in there. We say, you read this or you learn this, and we come back, we check on it and find out whether they did it or not. We've had to put a handle on a lot of things, and here's just one example. On the quiet time, we had to come up with a way of really making that thing work for them, and this really is working. We point out that poor communication, they get in the Word, God speaks to them. Prayer, they talk to Him about things totally unrelated to what they were in the Word about. So I see Mert Martin, and I say, hi, Mert, how you doing? Boy, here you went elk hunting. I'd be interested to know how you did. And he says to me, Ron, those Denver Broncos, I thought they were going to really be something this year. They're kind of slipping. I don't know about those guys. I say to Mert, remember those days back here at the Glen, man? We were, you know, walking around here, no street lights. Remember, you used to walk around, run into trees here at night trying to pray. We've both talked, and we've never communicated. We've never had fellowship. And so we point that out to them, that they can get in the Word, and God will speak to them, and they can be rude and neglect what He said. But what if we get in the Word, and then we respond back to God in prayer about what He said to us? And so we teach them to go through there and read and mark up that Bible, and then either as they're marking, talk to God about it, or after they've read and marked it, swing back through and talk to God about everything they marked. I mean, you can't believe the kind of walk with God some of these people are getting. One dear woman in one of my groups, you know, she came in, you know, it's about the 8th week in course 1. She said, well, I really didn't know whether to share this or not, but I have felt so close to God, I thought He was getting me ready to go home very soon. But then after responding back to God based on what's been the time the Word's covered, then to hit prayer lists and then hit ministry things and needs. But you can't believe what this little routine on the quiet time is doing for the lives of people. I've heard Sandy say, well, they read Mark, you know, they scratch it up. They use my personal reading record, do that. We've got a special diary thing called Bible Reading Highlights Record. Forgetting in the Word, get them doing that. They write down on that the best thought they got and how it impressed them. And it's a 4-step thing. That's how we get them in the quiet time. And it's over 5 weeks. The first 5 weeks, they get this input. And then they go from there with it. We put on a training thing in Seattle. And 2 NAV grads showed up, a husband and wife. Went through the training. Went back and used it, and we got a letter about 2 months later, and the wife said, I have had a consistent quiet time for 6 years. I have maybe missed once or twice in 6 years. But she said it was drudgery, it was hard, and she said, I have a new vitality and excitement in my quiet time. And this really meeting God, not a habit, that, oh man, that thing's really flying. Personal testimony, we've had to come up with some new illustrations. You ever hear the grape illustration? We heard of the grape and the marble last night, but this is the grape illustration. And, you know, we just point out that there are a lot of different testimonies that people acquire over the years. But we are preparing this testimony, salvation, how I received eternal life. And then as we work with them, oh, you're getting off in another grape. Oh, I sure am. But we have a basis for communication. So we've had to design some things like that. We've had to come down to 2 basic formats of a testimony, chronological in content and an overview flashback. There are a lot of little inworkings in that testimony that if you haven't been exposed to it, there's save you a lot of grief and heartache if you just go with some of our grief and heartache and put it to use. Now, a half day in prayer, we teach them how to take notes in a half day of prayer. What do you write down? They read how to spend a day in prayer. man, some of those people come out of that. We haven't had anybody directly translated into heaven yet, but there have been some pretty close. Boy, they can't believe that they spend over 3 hours with God. And very interesting, in our church, there were eight people going to go to Korea on a mission for our church. And six of those eight were 2-7 trained people. Interesting who would volunteer to go overseas to do a missionary project, isn't it? And so immediate response was, we need to have a half day of prayer and get the mind of God on this and pray about our finances. Man, they got together and they didn't go the half day route. I mean, they went the full day. They got with God and did business. And God met their needs, and they went to Korea and led people to Christ and came back higher than kites. And one of those couples, he's gone into a foreign student ministry. Another guy, he's a layman pastor now in the church. And I don't want to get off on too many war stories, but a checklist on what to do in the half day, what to bring in a half day of prayer. You know, I don't want them to show up without their glasses and all that good stuff. But I mean, we tell them when to exhale and when to inhale. And they say, yes, sir, and they do it. Just a little history on it. Let's jump into that. When I went to Denver, Leroy and I were driving along Hamden over to a war surplus place to try to find a warm coat for him. And he said, do you need a written job description? I said, no, but I'd just like to know what you think I ought to do. And he said, well, I've thought about it. He said, what I want you to do, he said, get as many Christians into the basics as you can. Let's shoot at that. And I won't take the time, but on my heart was I'd like to try some stuff in the local church. And I said, well, could I work on this in the context of a local church? He said, whatever you do, work in the local church. So there was the job description. So if you don't like what I've been doing, you know, just talk to Leroy. But that was the job description. And following that, Jerry White was very supportive, and Terry Taylor, they were very supportive. And we were able to push on through and get this stuff done. I think sometimes they wondered if we were ever going to get through with the revisions. I would say that courses 1 through 3, we've had about 8 revisions of that material based on the field testing. But we know we've got a validated product. You won't find anything in any bookstore that's got that kind of validation. There's nothing on the market that's got that kind of validation in any Christian ed circles, any Christian ed material. There's nothing that's got that kind of validation that we know what it'll do and know its limitations. It's in, as far as we know, it's in over 100 cities now in the U.S. And where we go from here, that will clarify as, you know, Stevens and I talk, and as we talk with some of you guys on Friday and Saturday, and as they talk to the RDs and Sheffield and Mayhall and whoever makes all these decisions. But we're moving along, and historically, that's where we're coming from. Let me jump back at one other thing I think I should say about the history of the thing. When we were working under Skip's leadership down in the southeast, working at Fort Benning, and God gave a good ministry there, good fruit, both in evangelism and discipling, and some staff came out of that thing. But there was such availability of those people. But then we moved to Western Michigan, and some of you know that culture, the Dutch culture. And boy, the two things that are king there are family and church. And so we were immediately competing for time with the family and the church. Now, I'm for family and I'm for church, but the thing became apparent that we had to use some of that church time to do what we wanted to do. So those were some beginning thoughts. How could we use the church time to get our job done and launch in there? So that influenced some of the thinking there. One other thing historically, I won't share the full testimony, but on wondering about the sovereignty of God, for about 4 years I did the fundraising, traveling around, raising money, working for Rod. And these guys that traveled with me kept getting engaged or married, and I ended up back on the road. You know, There's Russ Reed, and he's gone. Russ Korth, Jim North, Chuck Strittmatter, Roger Fleming, you know, Russ Johnson, Bob Stevens, on and on. And it reads like a navigator's who's who, but I stayed in the car. And I really had some hard struggles with that. Bob Stevens said at one point, he said, I think a man emotionally can only handle 2 months of that at a shot. On one assignment, I was out 5 months. And yet after 2 years in Denver, you know what dawned on me? There was no navigator I knew who had talked to as many pastors or nav grads and contacts about this thing of the church and how to work in it. And I nearly cried over that thing. I thought, all these heart problems I've had, and God uniquely prepared me to do this little project. And so they're just a little thing on the sovereignty of God. On philosophy, let's talk a little on that. If you look at an overview of a local church ministry, it will run something like this. Many churches, as you well know, are doing very aggressive evangelism and doing a fine job in it. Then the person comes into the church, and normally they visit the worship service, and so they're involved Sunday morning. Then they get into the teaching ministry of the church, the Sunday school. But a thing that's been rising much under the name of discipleship in the last 2 or 3 years has been what I would call, and some of the rest of you would call, a nurture group. Some of them tend to be therapy-type groups, like The Edge of Adventure, Workbook, Book, Tape by Keith Miller and Bruce Larson. The Serendipity materials are slanted that way a lot. Then there are the growth approach in the nurture group, where it's a Bible study group. It's something that will cause a person to grow spiritually. But there are enough people with hang-ups that need a therapy kind of group, then there are people that should grow. But that tends, in the church jargon, to come under the heading of discipleship. And so in talking to pastors, this is exactly, I've used this little outline that I'm giving you right here with a pastor. I'll say there are good nurture groups, but what we're talking about in the 2-7 series is training. The Bethel series is training. The 2-7 series is training. The evangelism explosion is training. And all of these require commitment, standards, time, effort, way beyond any of these other areas. So we don't want your whole church, we only want part of them who are really ready for something that is structured and formal and assignments that they can plow into, and that will be training. So that seems to give some perspective on where, to the pastor on where the thing fits in. Also, I've given you a couple pages in the handout, just a summary of the titles of the DFD books, what's in those chapters, and a list of the topics and verses on the TMS. We'll just show that to a pastor and say, in the 6 courses, they study all of these subjects, as well as learning how to be high-caliber small group leader. They go through this memory work, and it's a good selection of memory for their own life and ministry. So we'll show them those things, and with a pastor, I'll also show him that overview after we've talked a little bit. Now, another thing on philosophy, and this is part of God's leading too, is how do you put the squeeze to these people to meet our standards? And I'll share an answer to prayer. Some of you know the answer to that prayer. But boy, pacing the floor, God, how do we put the screws to these people to meet some standards without turning them off or making them give up? And, you know, in the local church, you know, if you do it like we do and say, well, you missed twice in this study group and you're out. You come twice without your work done in this group, you're out. Local church, you do that, and they say, well, you know, there's a church that's about 8 miles closer to our house we've just been dying to visit. And it's hard to box them in. And so the answer God gave us, and in every course we have a completion record. And they get angry, they grit their teeth, they frown at that piece of paper, and they turn to you or me as a leader and smile. Where before I used to have to be the disciplinarian, I had to be the drill instructor, I had to be the sergeant at arms, I had to be the big daddy saying, now come on, let's get going here. And now I just say, these are the requirements we need to complete this course, and before you can graduate and go into the next course, you need to do this. They stare at that thing and they kind of get a little angry. And some days they'll come in and, I only got one verse done tonight. But I'll, you know, and they kind of, you know, there's a purposefulness. Well, what an answer to prayer that page is. It takes all the pressure off the leader to motivate or enforce standards. They are all clearly measurable. And boy, when you turn them loose on this in course one, session five, and say, you've done all this work now, here's what you have to do to complete it. And several things they've already done, and immediately they get ink on the page and go with it. And this is they're meeting the standards. Nobody's slipping through below the standards. It just doesn't happen. Okay, philosophically, I'd like to say one other thing. I'd like to, the rare bird versus the diamond in the rough, okay? I think there are two legitimate philosophies here on producing quality disciples and disciple makers. And I do it both ways, and I trust you will do it both ways. But if I do the traditional navigator, let me try a darker one. Traditional navigator ministry, I will go after the rare bird. I will go after the top 2%. If in past years when I walked into a post chapel or a base chapel or a church and I felt I was looking for somebody to go after, I looked for the rare bird and went after that person or that couple. And that's about 2% of the population. I'm just in round figures. But what are we really saying? We're really saying is I have this standard right here. Here's where you are. Now you come in and meet this standard and you can be a part of this thing and we'll go with you. 2% will say, yeah, I'll go with that. And I think because we've had short-term ministry on a campus and with single people, we knew they were only going to be around, let's say, 3 years. We had to go that way and say, I'm going after the ones who will go with my standards now. But you know, sitting in that church, there's about 30%, who knows, maybe it's 40, maybe it's 25, but there's a big chunk of people that if you start out from here and give them this standard until they meet it, and then when they meet that, give them another standard, and then they meet that, and a little later give them this standard, we are seeing those people in this 30% over a period of time coming up and being the same caliber as those 2%ers. Now, there's still some with a higher capacity than others, but this is working. Bob Lewis used the term getting their RPMs up. That's right. Boy, just kind of getting that thing off a dead center and getting it moving. But to come into my course 6 this fall, and here are people, I mean, one guy during course 1, at the end of the meeting, he came up and said, oh, he said, thank you. You asked me to lead in prayer at the beginning of the meeting. I have never led in prayer out loud. Is that right? I mean, these people have a long way to go. But to come in here with the same bunch this fall and starting into course 6, do you know all they wanted to talk about is people they were sharing Christ with? I couldn't believe it. I thought, I just went around and I looked at each face and I remembered what they were like back in course 1. And normally, here's about the way it goes, that the first 3 courses, they think inward. And then the last 3 courses, they start to think outward. And we're not in a hurry to push them out in evangelism right away. But we are seeing these people in latter courses start to think about meeting the needs of other people as they get their own needs met. Evangelism explosion in the churches where we've got both 2-7 and evangelism explosion going, those who have gone through the 2-7 series and then evangelism explosion, they are the ones hanging in there doing evangelism week after week, month after month, and year after year. I think of one engineer and his wife. They dropped out of the 2-7 series after course 4. They just, you know, down here at course 4, they just had to get some ministry going. And so he really hit it in their visitation evangelism. Old Phil Berge. Mr. Non-Expressive Face, the Sphinx himself. Mind like a steel trap. Very methodical in his talk. You'd never think he'd pull that thing off. Man, he's been heading up that evangelism now for 3 years in that church. They've led many people to Christ. Okay, let's see if I got any other loose ends on philosophy. We really build on success and praise. It's not rebuke for failure. We don't say do this, and then when they fail, we chew them out. We set it just a little lower so they'll hit it. And then when they hit it, then we come in, wow, tremendous. You succeeded. The desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. The Proverbs 13:19 thing. Another issue, we need them 2 years. The common input in the transition of putting this thing together, both from NAV staff and from pastors and others, was, can't we shorten this thing? Can't you cover all that in less time? Yes, but you can't build it in less time. There's no way to build that quiet time in and build that scripture memory in and this stuff in less than 2 years. But that's not too much worse than we did on the campus, was it? I mean, how long did it take you and me to produce them on the campus or single military? We aren't too far off the pace. Some of those people, because of schedule, have to drop out, so it might take 3 or 4 years. But, man, they're as good a disciple as you'll see anywhere. Our approach to getting it going is training clinics. They come in for Friday night, all day Saturday. This is pastors, 2 or 3 key layman couples, NAV staff who want the input. And that gives them courses 1 and 2 and the philosophy and strategy. We send out now a tape recording and homework material. They put in 5 hours of preparation, then come to the clinic. And that's really working. Why do NAV staff have to go through the training? Well, the simplest parallel I can think on it is I don't really know how to put on a summer training program. I've never done it before. And so if you told me that I had to put on a summer training program, I'd be glad to sit down Friday night and all day Saturday and have somebody explain to me how to put on a training program. Well, it's no different. You know, most of us have not, doing the traditional singles ministry, have not really worked with the church. So why not spend a Friday and all day Saturday and learn what we've had to learn through all the failures? No need to reinvent the wheel and go out and make the same mistakes. Okay, I think I've said more than I know already, so I'll turn it back to Bob Stevens. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Ron. Just a couple philosophy things that are beginning to come in focus for me. One is, where does the 2-7 course fit in the community ministry? Now, we have talked about 2-7 staff, and I know that we've talked about in some cases, making decisions whether you're going to have a traditional NAV ministry or a 2-7 ministry. I'm beginning to feel that the 2-7 course is just one of the tools, to use Mert's expression, that we all ought to have in our carpenter box to use when it's appropriate, and that the distinction between 2-7 staff and traditional staff will probably break down as this tool becomes better known and the value of it becomes better known to each one of us. One of the things that I hear in the community ministry is that there are so many Christians out there clamoring for help that that if I were to try and meet all those needs, I wouldn't have any time to reach new people and to disciple. And I think the 2-7 course has the potential for helping with that problem. You know, you'll have to invest a little time to get the 2-7 course started in a few churches, but once it's started, it will continue to reproduce itself with a minimum of effort, and it gives you a place where you can direct the herd of Christians who want help in how to be in discipleship with very, very little effort on your part, and then it becomes a fishing pool. This is the way the fellows up in Denver use it. They have hundreds of people in 2-7 courses being taught by lay people all over the city doing basic NAV discipleship, and they just go around and pick off the ones that are ready for going further to invest their personal discipleship time in. So I think it has a lot of potential along those lines. Some of the things that we have in mind for the future, and these are very preliminary ideas. These are some of the things we're going to talk about Friday and Saturday at the 2-7 staff meeting. And incidentally, I've discovered that a lot of you are using the 2-7 course in a fairly significant way and have not been invited to that 2-7 staff meeting. If you would like to come and share your experience with us and get in on the discussions, you are welcome to come. Just let me know. Anyone who would like to come is welcome to come. We'll be starting after lunch Friday afternoon and probably finishing up sometime around the middle of the day on Saturday. But some of the things we have in mind are an orientation seminar for pastors with an audio-visual that will explain what the 2-7 course is and how it can be helpful to them and their church. We're going to put together a board of reference of pastors, different denominations, who endorse and have used in their church the 2-7 course. We're going to develop some new brochures. You have a brochure on your chair there, which is the only public relations piece that we have on the 2-7 course, and we feel that we can improve on that and also develop two brochures, one geared primarily for pastors and one for lay people. Monty Unger is going to put an article in the log on the 2-7 ministry in April. We are thinking about writing a book on the 2-7 course geared to pastors because pastors read books, and this would be a way to acquaint pastors with how the 2-7 course could help them and their church. We want to work on developing relationships with denominational leaders to gain approval and endorsement for use in various denominations. One of the things that I'm really encouraged about are the graduating senior conferences that are being planned in Illinois, for example, and in the Southeast, and probably other places that I'm not aware of. Conferences which will begin to gear the graduating senior into what he's going to face out in real life. And I know in Illinois, they're going to take them through a 2-7 clinic so that they will be qualified to use the 2-7 course, know what it is, as one of the things that will be helpful to them when they get out in the church. We're going to have a 2-7 conference here at the Glen next summer, July 29 to August 4th. We haven't named it yet. Probably call it something like Graduate Ministry Conference or Postgraduate Ministry Conference or something like that. And I hope that the regions will direct not only graduating seniors, but graduates that have been out there for a few years who might profit from learning more about the 2-7 course. It'll be a traditional conference that will preach the word in the evening, and then during the workshops in the day, we'll give them the philosophy and the training in how to use the 2-7 course. And that'll be an open conference for anyone. We feel pastors will come, lay people, and NAV graduates. That's July 29 to August 4th here at the Glen. The biggest problem we have is maintaining quality control. You know, we're concerned that the course be used properly so that it produces the kind of disciples that the church needs. And these are the hardest problems that we're wrestling with. How to maintain quality control as the interest builds and the demand increases for it across the country in the church. That's all we have to say, and we appreciate the opportunity to share these things with you, and you'll have an experienced 2-7 user in your discussion group the next hour after coffee break, so that will be the place to ask your questions, and I'm sure Ron would be eager to discuss philosophy or anything further that you'd like to talk to him about. We'll be dismissed now for coffee break.